Welcome to the Maris Review. I'm Maris Kreisman, and what a thrill it is to be joined today by Phoebe Robinson. She's a stand-up comedian, writer, producer, and actress. She's the co-creator and co-star of the hit podcast and series of TV specials, Two Dope Queens. She's also a New York Times bestselling author whose latest essay collection is called Please Don't Sit on My Bed in Your Outside Clothes. And this book is the first book out from Tiny Reparations Books, which is Phoebe's new imprint at Button, PRH. Phoebe.
I know. Just reading that, my eyes just went like glazed over. I was like, what is happening? Oh my God.
It's so amazing because I remember when you were getting ready to write your first book and we were supposed to meet for coffee to talk about how publishing works. And now, Phoebe, you have your own imprint.
I know.
How does this feel? Tell me about this.
I'm really excited. I'm so pumped because it's been a dream of mine since 2014. It also feels like, it feels like time has flown by so quickly. And I'm just like, I can't believe I'm in a position now where I get to publish other people. And I'm really pumped because, you know, it was so tough for me to sell my first book because, you know, people just were dismissing it and saying it's not relatable. People don't want to read books written by funny Black women, just like all the things. It was really sort of terrible. Mm-hmm. And so to now be in this place where I'm publishing like women, people of color, people from the queer community, and a wide ranging sort of subject matter, I feel really proud. And I feel like this is such a huge responsibility that I really want to be intentional and get it right and really have this imprint do the things that I am setting out for it to do.
I love this. Tell me what makes a Tiny Reparations book. Like what are some of the qualities?
I think every book we acquired, I think within the first two pages I knew. So It really has to have a very strong voice and be a very specific point of view. And it doesn't have to sound like me. That's like the great thing. It's like, you know, we have a poetry collection on here. We have a biography about Marsha P. Johnson on the slate. We have this fantastic art heist novel called Portrait of a Thief by Grace D. Lee, who wrote it while she was in medical school. Do you understand? Yeah. That's nuts. You should have her on instead of me.
Exactly.
And it's about 20-something Chinese Americans who are hired to steal Chinese artwork from museums and bring it back to China. So of course it deals with identity, but then it has this really hooky, like Ocean's 11 energy to it. So I think that no book has to sound like any particular way. It just has to be authentically you and have something to say. And I'm always looking for, you know, some lighter stuff too. I think we get a lot of like, here's a slavery narrative. And I'm just like, y'all, there's so much. Obviously, that's a huge part of American history, but that's not the only part of American history that, you know, concerns Black people. So I really want this imprint to be joyful and impactful. And yeah, just if you have something really smart to say, you can say it in a really cool, interesting way. I'm so interested.
I love this. And tell me a little bit about reading submissions and what that's been like, or because that used to be incredibly overwhelming for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. I think what helps is that right now we're set to publish like 3 to 5 books a year. So we have my book coming out this year. The next year is 5 books. In 2023, it's 5 books. I think eventually I would like for us to double that to like 10, maybe even go to 15, but I'm never want this imprint to be like 60 books a year. Yeah. No. So it's manageable. Like I'm in a space where if something comes in and it really sounds interesting, and my editor, Amber Oliver, is really excited about it, I can like, you know, wake up early or be like, okay, I guess I won't Netflix tonight. I'll read this instead. But usually like I know right away, or if I'm like, okay, let me read the first 100 pages because it's not all the way there. But if I think there's enough like potential here where Amber could really work her magic and get it to that next level, then I'll do that. But yeah, I really, when there's stuff where we're just like, oh, the idea was great and the execution's not that great, we could kind of dip out after 60 pages and just be like, we tried and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. 60. That's given a lot of time, actually.
Yeah, I know.
The world is racing to get back to normal and start meeting up in person again. But after this past year, getting back to feeling normal takes time. As much as I've loved seeing friends and colleagues IRL again, with that excitement comes a good deal of dread. If you're feeling overwhelmed by it all, you're not alone. It's important to find the support you need to face those feelings and move forward. We all talk to our friends when we're experiencing issues, but they don't always offer the advice we need. Getting unbiased feedback and advice from a licensed professional can be refreshing and actually rewarding. More than 50% of Americans struggle with their mental health. We all need help sometimes, and asking for support when you need it is actually a sign of strength. Talkspace works around your schedule at your convenience. Send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist in the app and schedule live video sessions with your licensed therapist from anywhere. Whether you're experiencing depression, anxiety, or other problems, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you sort through any issue, with thousands of licensed therapists available to match with you. Talkspace therapists are experts in dozens of specialties. Start feeling better with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code MARISREVIEW. That's $100 off when you use code MARISREVIEW at Talkspace.com.
Tell me about the rest of the team and like how it's been to work with people in publishing who you used to work with only as an author.
Yeah. I mean, my partner in this is Christine Ball, who is fantastic. And she's been really good about like, if I have any questions about anything, she is always able to give me an answer. But having her by my side is really great because she really gets the vision of the imprint. And then, you know, on the marketing publicity side, this is across the board with most publishers, is majority white. And so I specifically for publicity, I wanted to bring on my two publicists, Brittany, who's Black, and Sam, who's Indian, to help sort of just make sure that all the books that we have on the slate are really having as much exposure as possible. So that's been really helpful. And, you know, we're like a small crew and, you know, it's a massive undertaking, but I think we're in a good spot and I really like what we're doing. And I just want to keep getting bigger. Maybe I would love to have some like interns or something, because I just think, you know, I just think about like publishing is so daunting to get into. And yes, I think that if you don't have connections or you don't have the information, you financially aren't in a good enough spot to start out in publishing, it's really hard to make this your career path.
Yeah. And as you mentioned in your essay collection, the hashtag publishing paid me was just a really painful experience.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of always have a sneaky suspicion that obviously people from underrepresented groups are not getting paid what they're worth. But then when people were just sharing what they were making, you were like, oh yeah, my suspicions were correct. And I always think people think writing is so glamorous. And, you know, like we're constantly underpaid. We're constantly like pushed up against deadlines. And to me, I'm going, it's so difficult to write a book under normal circumstances. And when your advance is like my advance for my first book was like 50,000, which is like not bad, but that's spread out over 18 months.
Sure.
I have to pay my lit agent, have to pay my manager, have to pay taxes.
Yeah, so by the time you get your first check. Yeah.
It's like nothing. And you're like, well, I had to do all these freelance gigs in order to like survive. And I think writers, well, I'm certainly not in a place where I can get like a livable events, it makes the writing process so much easier because your attention is not divided with like, I got to get this work so I could pay my rent. Mm-hmm. And that's taken away from writing the book of your dreams.
Yeah, so the actual like being able to be a writer of a book as your primary mm-hmm. job is such a rare thing, Phoebe.
And yeah. So cool
to be able to do that. Yeah. Do you see, I know that you also have a production company called Tiny Reparations. Mm-hmm. Will there be crossover there? Like, will you be, is this Hello Sunshine kind of stuff?
I would definitely like there to be some crossover. I think we are still in early stages of the production company. We have my Comedy Central talk show come out. We have three shows in development right now. One's an animated series, which I never thought I would be doing, but it's super fun. And so I feel like we just need to establish more of a foothold in TV. And I think we'll be in a great spot to sort of adapt a book into like, you know, a limited series or a streaming movie, but that is the ultimate goal. Yeah.
That is great. So let's talk about, I haven't seen you during the whole pandemic. One of the things that I did during this time that you did too, was really double down on reading as like kind of an act of survival.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like real necessary escapism. Tell me about what you read that you were into. And so, I warned you about this, but
yes.
what book do you wish could have been a Tiny Reparations book?
Ooh, okay. So I have a couple. I am so obsessed with Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed. I really love that book. I thought it was so well done. I got the chance to just do an IG chat with her because I just like DM'd her and I was like, I just really like you. Can I just interview you on Instagram? And she was like, great. So I really love that book. I really loved The Other Black Girl. That is a really great book too. I read that. I was like, oh, I would have loved to publish that. Mm-hmm. And then Minor Feelings. I read that book in a day. Yeah. So those are the three. I know I cheat. I should have just said one, but I gave you three.
Extra credit there, Phoebe. And so now let's talk about the actual essays in this essay collection. One of the things that I found incredibly poignant was your essay about opting out of motherhood. I went to a doctor couple months ago and the nurse said, could you be pregnant? And I said, no. And she said, do you want to be? And I said, no. And she said, but what about your husband? What does he want? And it was like, do you think I hadn't consulted him?
Yeah. That, you know, that experience right there truly crystallizes why I wanted to write this essay, because I think people like us who are voluntarily child-free, people are always like, are you sure? You haven't thought about it. And it's like, you don't think we've thought about this? You think we just woke up and just decided to make this major life decision without any sort of like, you know, contemplation? And I found that, you know, while there are people who are supportive of folks' decision to not have children, I think on the whole, women are judged based on whether or not they are mothers, whether or not they are good mothers. And, you know, there are people who can't have children. There are other circumstances in the choice to not have kids. And does that mean that their lives are invalid or that they're not worthy human beings or not contributing to society? And I really just wanted to write this essay to let other people who are in their mid-30s like me, younger than me, older than me, to sort of be like, oh yeah, I feel seen. There's no need to judge women for choosing what works best for their lives. And that society needs to have more compassion and allow women to have the space to build the life that they want to build without you judging them for it.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think it's especially clarifying because I think we're in a similar space where we have found the soulmate. And I always thought that like once that happened, that urge would kick in, and it just never
happened. And that's okay. It's amazing. And like, it's so hard just to find a person you want to walk through life with. So it's like, if you could do that, you know, hats off. Anything else is just icing on the cake, you know?
Yeah. And I loved, speaking of that, your essay about your quarantine with British Bake Off, as you refer to your partner, and how you ultimately managed to become best friends, which is like a very specific, different kind of relationship than what you had. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So he works in music as a tour manager, and he's been doing that since he was 17. So when we met in 2017, he lived in Portland, but he was on the road all the time. Yeah. And so we were long distance for probably like the first 13, 14 months. And then, you know, we see each other like once a month, you know, it would be nice and it'd be great, but it's not the same as when you're living with someone day in, day out, because when you long distance, you meet up for like a week, it's romantic. It feels like a vacation and not always like a real relationship. So to go from that to quarantining and being around each other day in, day out, we, you know, our bond deepened. You know, of course there were moments where we sort of like butted heads, because as people who like to travel and move about and be independent, to have to really contain yourself, I think was an adjustment. But I think it really helped us like communicate more, because it wasn't like, oh yeah, I have 20 minutes of FaceTime, I could chat and then I gotta go. Like, we just would stay up late night sometimes talking till like 2 or 3 in the morning, just hanging out. And we really got to know each other in a different way. We're 4 years in and I'm loving it. And he's the best. He's my soulmate, my best friend. It's just great.
I love that. Let's switch it up and talk about business books. For the most part, they just suck as a genre. they're so awful, and so like, they're very much like the space of the old white man. That's really for old white men. tell me about it. So there's an essay in your book in which you give some great tips as you've become a boss, a person who has employees, and Warren Buffett really missed out on some lessons. Tell me about this.
You know, when I was like, oh, I'm going to start this production company, this is so exciting, I'll have like cute office furniture, and we'll just be in pitch meetings all day, and that's what the company's going to be. And then we actually are starting a company from the ground up. It's like, no, we have to deal with overhead. We have to deal with employee health insurance. You have to deal with managing your employees and doing employee reviews. And, you know, understanding that, like, you know, the beginning, I'd be like, oh, like, I'm like the chill boss. I'm cool. Like, you work for me, but you want to hang out with me. And I was like, oh, hey guys, this is like early on, it's like a Friday night. And I was like, what if we all like went bowling after work? And they were like, what? And then I was like, oh, I'm the man. You don't want to hang out with me. You want your break away from me. And just all those sort of adjustments you have to make is what I wanted to write about in this book, because I just felt like a lot of business books sort of paint this kind of like Cinderella sort of like, just believe in yourself and work really hard and it'll all like work out for you. And so many businesses don't flourish or they close. And so like, let's be honest about what's going on. And, you know, from the essay, thing that I am so passionate about is like making sure you have a lawyer, because I've seen it with my friends where they signed a crappy contract. And like, I know a comic, he did an album and he didn't have a lawyer and he signed a terrible contract and he made zero money from it. And it's just one of those things where it's like, no one should ever be taken advantage of. And I don't understand legalese and When I first got a lawyer, he was not on retainer. I was just like, here's my tiny little bit of money. Can you meet this contract, please? I promise I will actually have a career one day. And he got me out of some, like, I never had any bad situations come along because he was just like, do not do this deal. This is not good. You need to understand this. And I was like, oh, whoa, thank you so much. So to me, I'm like, having someone who will protect you, because I consider myself a small business owner, and I feel like anyone who's a small business owner, like, you need that protection because you don't have millions of dollars where, like, if something happens, I'll be fine. It's like, my money is my money and I can't lose it, you know?
That seems fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do think, like, the horror stories I've been hearing lately, writing for digital platforms is just like a hornet's nest. And yeah, it's sometimes so hard because you're not getting paid that much for the thing you're writing, but like, you still don't want to get taken advantage of. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, I used to freelance write stuff for XO Jane and it was like $50 and you know, you do all this online writing, you have to spend like 3 weeks trying to track down like $500 or something from all these gigs that you did. And it's just, not only is it demoralizing, but you're just like, I just want to make a living doing what I like to do. And I like to write and I should be able to get paid on time. And it's so hard for freelancers. It's so, so hard.
It's really stupid.
Yeah, it is.
And then Phoebe, I wanted to talk to you about a topic that we've been consumed with in book publishing for the last 2 years, say, the anti-racist reading list.
Yes. Oh, it's my favorite.
You don't think it's the answer to everything? World peace?
If you just read Robert DiAngelo, everything will work out. You're just like, oh my God. Oh my God, you guys. Yeah, it's been an interesting time because I do think a lot of those books are valuable and necessary, but I think it's very easy, as I wrote about in my book, to get caught up in, here's this new book, let me highlight these things and like, I'll keep learning, I'll keep studying, in air quotes, I'm using the word studying, but then you're not actually applying anything, any of the things that you're learning to your actual life. And so my thing is like, yes, if you want to support authors who write this, absolutely. Like, they are phenomenal. Like, Ejim X. Kendi is fantastic. Ijeoma Oluo is amazing. Austin Channing Brown is great. But that is not where the work should stop. Those are not they're Black people who write, you know, poetry, novels, romance, YA, all that stuff should be read. And I think we just limit to the only sort of worthy work from the Black community is stuff that's talking about pain and struggle and trauma. I think that does a disservice to all the authors out there. I think it also allows people to not see Black people as anything other than their life equates suffering and pain. And so for me, I'm happy that this category of literature exists, but I do not want it to be the dominating topic of conversation when it comes to Black authors.
Yeah, that's great. And tell me, Phoebe, just like a little bit about, are you thinking of this collection differently as someone who is running an imprint now? Is there something that you want this collection to represent or to show to the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're just writing stuff for yourself, you're just like, oh, I'm just representing me. And with this book, I wanted to set the tone for the imprint and to be like, this is a taste of things to come. And you know, I have so many authors on the lineup for next year and 2023. So I just want to make sure that like, I kick things off well, and then that they will just like flourish and skyrocket. So that is the plan.
I love that. Thank you. Phoebe, before we go, would you like to recommend some books for us? You've already recommended us quite a bunch, but.
Yes. Oh gosh. What is the name of that book? Oh, it's called, you know, I can look it up. I just started reading it on Sunday. It's called Do Nothing by Celeste Headlee. And it's like, Do Nothing, How to Break Away from Overworking, Overdoing, and Underliving. And I'm about like 30 pages in, and it's sort of kind of talking about the history of like work culture and how like this notion of like being efficient and just filling ourselves with like sort of busy work is actually inefficient, and we're less happier than we were before we were had all this technology and everything. I really like that book. Mm-hmm. And I'm also reading this book called Queenie. I want to get the author's name right, because she has three names. Queenie, Candace Cardi Williams, which I think the BBC is developing into a series right now. And it's just great. It's just nice to read about a young Black woman making horrible dating decisions. And you go, yeah, when I was in my 20s, I did some dumb stuff too. So those are the two things I'm reading right now. So a little bit of like fun, and also a little bit of like, ooh, this is how I should like reorganize my life a little bit.
That's perfect. Thank you so much, Phoebe. And I'm so excited to see what Tiny Reparations books will be like in the future.
Thank you, Maris. This was great.
Yay. Thank you for listening to the Maris Review. And check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.